In 1975, when I came here, I announced that I came not to build just another church. The church that called me had a great reputation, had been one of the largest churches in the Los Angeles area, had dwindled down to 105 members who voted me in debt, without faith, and not the congregation in general, but the leadership of the church, the board, a business manager they had, and treasurer, and other people, had lost respect for the office of the pastor. The pastor called me. He's a financial consultant, and through the recommendations of other ministries that I had worked with, and some many years earlier, I had preached here on one Sunday morning in one of my trips through Los Angeles. When I arrived, I talked to the board as a financial consultant, invited with the pastor. They had a business manager that insisted that he sit in and that the pastor not sit in. I told him he had about 5 seconds to leave and about 3 minutes to get the pastor in there, or I was gone. I came at the behest of the pastor, not some yokel business manager. And when I did that, the treasurer decided he'd get up and walk out too, which, as I learned more about the church, was maybe the best thing that happened. The pastor came in, and we were absent the treasurer and the business manager. I listened to them discuss their problems. And I said two things. I said, you got bigger problems than your money problems. God can supply the money problem. You got a spiritual problem. You've lost faith. So you ought to change the name of your church from Faith Center to Fear Center, and the name of your broadcast network from Faith Broadcasting Network to Fear Broadcasting Network. And many of you have heard me tell this, and some of you were here when it happened. And you've lost respect for God-ordained leadership. I mean, it's obvious you're warring among yourselves, and you think the pastor's made mistakes, and he may have. But God didn't make a mistake when he established the office. When kings went bad, once God established the kingship, when kings went bad in the Old Testament, both the king and the people suffered, and God sure suffered. And when the people went bad, rebelled against the king, and God had a good king, everybody suffered. When the king went bad and the people were good, everybody suffered. And there were more bad kings than good kings. But God established the office, and he didn't change until he decided to abandon the kingship in one stream, though he kept his promise of David's perpetual kingdom. God gave some apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers for the perfecting of the saints. And until you can straighten your spiritual problem out, and figure out that there's a difference between recognizing human mistakes and attacking what God has established, the office itself. And you understand that God's not the author of fear, and that he responds to faith. Don't even think about talking to me anymore. Solve your own problems. And I got walked out. delegation came to the hotel in the early afternoon as I was preparing to fly back to San Francisco and asked if I'd consider being pastor. And you know the rest of the story. I made certain demands in writing, beginning with the board resigning. I knew I'd have the power for select fire business manager, but I didn't have to quit before I got here. Demanded a unanimous vote, and to my surprise, was called in San Francisco after the board meetings and the election. And the words were, "Hello, Pastor. I did not want to come here as pastor." It took me from November until a day in February when, like Jesus in the garden, I accepted God's calling and it came into my heart. I thought I was just going to be here temporarily, place another pastor after the financial problem was solved and be on my way. One of the terms was I'd continue to live in San Francisco. Since I was elected and unanimous, I then said, "I'm not going to build just another church. This church had its chance to be that. If you want an ordinary church, look in the yellow pages. If you want to go to church for geographic reasons, look in the yellow pages and get out a map. If you want to go to a church that'll take over your family responsibility so you can abscond from it, go find one. If you want a church that's more concerned about what you want than what God wants, go find them. They're all over town. If you want a pastor that'll nurse you and carry a bottle all the time, go find them. They're all over town. About all they can do. I'm coming to town looking for that uncommon man or woman. They'll commit themselves to doing it God's way." And I announced two goals: return this church to faith, which is hanging your body on God's promises, and the other side of faith is faithfulness and respect. Yeah, I'd like to be liked, and the older I get, the more I wish it could be easier. God never really said that pastors had to be liked. He intended the office be respected. Happy is the congregation has a man that enhances the office, but doesn't matter. It's an office established by God, and there is nowhere in God's book that God says He gave some saints to perfect pastors. That's His job with me. My job is perfecting you sheep. And sheep are sheep. And God didn't say, and uses an analogy, other animals. He picked the sheep, the dumbest animal on earth to characterize, and the most contrary to try to lead. Sheep will do what sheep want to do. That's why a shepherd carries a staff that has a crook at one end and a hard, long rod on the other end so he can whack you and grab you when you get off the trail, and whack you when you need it. You seldom see any pictures of shepherds carrying bottles or candy jars. They don't carry massage tables. They don't even carry bugles. You're supposed to stay close enough. He can get to you with the staff and the crook. Pastor means shepherd. God gave some apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, and teachers. Now it's time for some shepherding again. It's a war, as this church gets older, to keep it from settling down and becoming like other churches. We don't pray in public. Why? We don't have any prayers and service. Most people don't believe the Bible and pay no attention to what it says. They do things the way they've been done. Go ahead and read Matthew 6, if you don't believe me. That's where the Lord's Prayer is. The disciples said, teach us to pray. He said, when you pray, say this. But he also said, when you pray, in that same chapter, don't go on the street corners like the Pharisees do to be seen of men, but go in the closet and shut the door. And pray in secret to your heavenly Father who will reward you in secret. And when you pray, say this, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Now how many want to hazard a guess whether that prayer down through the centuries has been prayed more often in closets than it has in public to be seen of men? To make void the Word of God by our traditions. I have asked you to make the cathedral an atmosphere that is explosive with God's presence so that when I open it at 11:30, we start out in a dead run. My Bible says, if two of you on earth shall agree as touching anything that they shall ask, it'll be done of our Father who art in heaven. That obviously doesn't mean, well, I agree with you. It's some joinder of witness that when two can come together in that united way. What happened on the day of Pentecost? They were all with one accord, in one place, suddenly there came a sound from heaven. You're not doing it. I've asked those who have the honor of God's placement and timing of being the audience that creates the atmosphere from which this word goes to the world every Sunday. As those who held the ropes for Paul and led him over the wall in Damascus and share until Jesus comes in everything that has been done as a result of Paul's ministry, you create the atmosphere. In that beautiful cathedral, there's 30 minutes from 11 o'clock, the true starting time, until 11:30, that you could carry that responsibility. Until if I weren't ready to teach, the atmosphere would pull it out of me. Where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst. Omnipresence is the theology teaching God is everywhere by His Spirit. So there must be some manifestation of His presence, some add-on to the reality when two or three are gathered in His name. If I don't even have to qualify it. I don't have a congregation coming into that cathedral, united in that quiet, secret attitude. Every person in there carrying a responsibility to create an atmosphere by your silent, quiet, non-obvious meditating and praying and whispering a prayer and getting your spirit in unity with God's Spirit in preparation for the Word. Oh, you spoiled brat babies. Doc ain't getting here till 11:30, so I'll straggle in 11:29. Not anymore. Now, I'm telling you, if you're not in that cathedral at 11 o'clock Sunday morning, the doors are closing at 11 o'clock. And if I get some snot-nosed usher that has a friend outside the door, both of them will be outside the door if he breaks my rule come Sunday. I'm on the warpath with people that have decided they can run this church better than me. Well, it ain't going to be the church you're in. I'll be the boss of my dying day here. I may get out of the coffin if I see somebody doing the wrong thing. Now, you better hear me. I've said this before, and seldom do I get things enforced anymore, and so I decided to start enforcing it myself. I may be walking around that church Sunday morning to see whether or not people are getting in at 11 o'clock. You get in there, inside that cathedral, by 11 o'clock. Well, what if we have a traffic problem? Well, quit cutting it so close. Well, you do sometimes. Right! I'm the pastor and you're the sheep. That's part of what I came here to teach. There is a difference. Out on the street we meet as equals. Not inside that cathedral. This democracy gig is straight from hell. God never created deacon boards. The word means servant. The New Testament church appointed, the apostles appointed servants. And they knew they were being appointed servants. Slaves in the first place to the Lord, under His delegated authority of the apostles, they appointed those slaves to serve in that place. Seen fat deacons preening themselves in their authority as I grew up in the church. Not in this church. If you want that, get out. One thing you can always know about this pastor from the day he came, you know where I stand. And if you don't like it, I ain't changing. So you might as well go. Don't contaminate the spiritual atmosphere with a permanent backslidden condition. Now, I've allowed it too long, ain't allowing it anymore. And some of you women showing up, the bus leaves at 10 after 11. If you get in there at 11, we don't have a problem. Don't come straggling in here expecting us to figure out a way to take care of your kids when I've provided an expensive tour and guided tour and a bus. That bus leaves at 10 after 11, and it better pull out of the parking lot at 10 after 11 on Sunday. And if you ain't here, if you've driven 100 miles, you take your kids and go to a museum by yourself. Clear? You manage to get to work at 7 and 8 o'clock on the other 6 days, but God can't get you down here until you are parked and ready to go before 11 o'clock. You going to be there at 11? None of your business. I'll be there when I get there. I may surprise you Sunday morning. I might start preaching at 11 o'clock. Let them sing after I'm done. Then the offering ought to be bigger because you've learned more. Are we understanding one another?
Yes, sir.
Now, I tore into the Voices of Faith just before 9 o'clock. There are no volunteers working in this church. And I've discovered, nice as she may be, the girl's been calling some of you, has compromised my principles and sounded a little too giddy and a little too happy that she finally found someone willing to come here and be a voice of faith. Well, go to hell, because that's what you're going to do. Breaking your commitments to God. Better you get fired from your secular job for being late or not showing up than to make a commitment to be a voice of faith and not be here. You belong to God, and 10% of your time and your money is already designated. That's the Lord's. That goes to the storehouse. I don't want those who make 7-month commitments and those who become interns here and come into the supportive ministry on staff. I expect more out of them. For the congregation, I told you, I don't want any more than 10% of your time, period. And there are things that you do that God wants you to do that are the Lord's work. Being a father is the Lord's work. Your children are not your own. They're a stewardship. Your job, however miserable it may be, becomes a stewardship and an expression time for you to prove that you will do something right, even if you don't like doing it. And by the way, the definition of work is doing something you don't want to do. This baby boom yuppie insanity that everybody somehow has a right to do what they enjoy doing is destroying this earth. And destroying the work ethic that made America what it was. That was based in Puritan theology, by the way. You're to be accountable. You're to be faithful. When Paul starts naming sins, he doesn't start with makeup and sex. He says, put away lying. I got a congregation full of liars that have made commitments and broken them more times than you can count. And I'm sick of it, and so is God. Now, the problem is my staff's been compromising. I'll never compromise to get the work done. I get angry when I see people that are supposed to see it as an honor to be in the cathedral. And the red seats tell me that somebody is not being faithful, but I can draw a line and turn it into nothing but red seats and rejoice because I have not compromised God. I've told you this story before. I started my work with my father in a Sunday school in an old First Assembly of God church with a bunch of second and third generation charter member descendants that thought God was so fortunate to have them do something. And I went into the son of the richest farmer in the church, whose tithe used to support the pastor, a little overweight, arrogant snot. His name was George, and I said to him, I typed up the requirements to be a teacher in the Sunday school. His dad put me in charge. He read them, he says, well, you ain't going to get anybody to do this. I said, oh, yes, I will. Well, who? Who are you going to get? I won't do it. You haven't got anybody. I said, George, it's morally wrong for anybody to teach these kids with less of a commitment than what I've outlined here. Well, you haven't got anybody. Nobody will do this. I said, oh, yes, they will. Who? I said, you're looking at him. I'll teach this whole church from the nursery to the adults. Well, this is what the teachers will commit to. Well, he went home, and we suddenly had a burst of teachers. I remember when I came here, the youth department was a wreck. They had a youth minister that was more interested in flirting with the girls and getting dates than he was doing the job for God. And I remember when I fired him, called a youth meeting. As a snot-nosed quasi-gang member, with no dad to straighten him out, and a faithful mother named Joe Cortez, I hope he's listening. You see him every Sunday waiting out there for my car. I said, Joe, you've got a capacity to be a leader, but you're a little smart-ass snot. Now, you're either going to straighten out and help me, or you're going to get your ass out of here. He straightened out, worked for me for 12 years, and his whole family are stellar members of the church, and his wife organizes the children's program. I remember the Sunday when I got up to take an offering, and I was talking, didn't intend to, I was talking about Joshua and the taking of Jericho, and how God, as the captain of the Lord's host, appeared to him and told him what to do and how to do it, including the people were to march around the city, organized in a certain way in that hot desert, and they were to march and keep their mouth shut, not say a word. For 6 days, and on the seventh day, when some of those self-serving theologians who could always argue God's laws when it benefited them would begin to complain, maybe, that this is the Sabbath, we're not supposed to work, and we're going around seven times. And they weren't to say a word until Joshua told them to shout. And I thought to myself, you know, three and a quarter million people, at least, marching and keeping their mouth shut, not saying a word. This is the same people that have murmured for 40 years at the slightest provocation. Now they're going to march and keep their mouth shut, doing what appears to be a senseless thing. And they're not even told why. Not even told why. God told Joshua, don't you think those 3.25 million people are getting blisters on their feet, watching the same rump wiggle in front of them for 7 days? And I imagine that was sort of an odoriferous line. What's spiritual about what they were doing? We're in the promised land. God parted waters and rained bread down from heaven. Water out of a rock, and quail when we wanted it. Miracles galore, pillar of smoke by day and fire by night. Now I'm looking at that wiggle bun in front of me. Why? If one of that 3.25 million had said why, all 3.25 million most likely would have had their bones strewn along the shores of the Jordan River, and God would have figured out a way to start over with someone else. And I remember it hit me as I was taking up that offering. And I said to this congregation, because this was quite a ways into my pastorate where I was fielding the problems on every side, and I said, as the Spirit took over, I'm not on trial here anymore, and I will never be on trial another day. Take Gloria into the other studio. I will never be on trial here, not one more day. Hurry up, Gloria. Get your stuff and go. I said, I won't be on trial here one more day. Not even one more second. You're on trial. I've been on trial long enough. I taught them enough. You're going to follow me as I follow Christ. And there have been all these people sitting around seeing what this new pastor is going to do and then weighing whether or not it's right. You're going to march and keep your mouth shut, or you're going to get out. I still remember that Sunday. If I were to play the tape, as I asked those that would follow me and march and keep their mouth shut, you could hear their feet thumping on the floor as they ran to the front. That was the turnaround. As the youth department turned around when I drew a line, the church turned around at that point. Well, too much of the church had turned back. Too many of you have been around too long. You think you know too much. I've kept this church 10, 15 years ahead of the times with God's leading. I intend to keep doing it. You better start understanding the privilege that has been given you, and you better start acting like it, or I will empty the cathedral. A few weeks ago, I said I'd get rid of it. Well, I can still do that, but I'll empty it and prove I can preach with an empty building if I have to. I found out today, comparable to Patton's mess that he arrived at that Moroccan outpost, voices of camera people. Camera people have been, volunteers have been showing up. And people, oh, I'm glad you got here. 5 minutes to 11, we've got a cameraman finally. I have staff people that backslide if they don't sit in the service on Sunday at least two Sundays a month. I discovered that people too lazy to tell me or too fearful to tell me so I can do something like I'm doing now, that they don't have enough people there for camera work on Sunday, or grabbing and preempting my staff members that I've given the day off to get there and hear a message, because they backslide if they don't hear the teaching. So I begin to pry. I really think it's a leadership problem with the people I put in charge. I don't think that you lack the ability. I'm just going to say to you, if you think that you are volunteering to serve on a camera on Sunday, you got a sick idea in your head. There are no volunteers. You are the Lord's 100%. This is part of your 10% commitment to that which we do together, to the church that has fed you and provided you life and that God decided to put you in so you could follow me as I follow Christ. And you are honored above many to be able to take that camera on Sunday morning, but you shouldn't be doing it every Sunday. Lazy sub-management works a good horse to death. We got enough volunteers. Years ago, I said, I want to be able to run a festival with volunteers as we train people with cameras. We got enough volunteers. What is this pastor's reserve guard thing? Is it a lie when you tell me you're available? And when we call on you, it ain't some slipshod, I could say something else, kind of performance. You don't go to work when you feel like you can show up. I better have a list of cameramen that are available among you volunteers, and you better start renewing your commitments tonight or get out of the way. We're not running God's business the way it's been running any longer. And believe you me, there are some sore heads back here that have been running it this way. You aren't doing me a favor to get on a camera on Sunday morning. You're done the favor. You better see it that way or get yourself out of my eyesight. You're part of the team that makes this voice go around the world, and you don't see that as a privilege and an honor? You're not fit to even come to the cathedral if that's your state of mind. So I better have a list on Thursday of volunteers and those that are picked, including a bench of two or three in case somebody does get sick or has a wreck on their way to the cathedral. And you better be there at the set time that you're called and told to be there. And you better not be late. Don't come straggling in and then somebody grab you and say, oh, we need a cameraman. What do you mean we need a cameraman? Try me. They tried that in Hartford when I fired the whole staff and locked the cameras down. I can lock one camera down, sit on my stool there Sunday morning. put another camera locked on the blackboard and operate without a cameraman. They're working you to death. Man behind camera one. Every Sunday he's up on the platform. We got five people that can handle that platform camera. He's going to backslide if he doesn't get in the congregation twice a week. Probably you already have. Look at me. I got to take a good look at you.
Yes, sir.
If they put you up there every Sunday, I better see you coming to me and say, somebody ain't doing what you said.
Yes, sir.
I'm not tolerating any longer people acting like that they're doing a favor to God and volunteering. You better be batting the door down, asking for the privilege to be taught how to handle a camera, to have that ministry so you can share in everything that's done in the same way those that held the ropes for Paul at Damascus. Now, I may fool you Sunday. As I said, I might start preaching 11 o'clock. But you better understand, you better play this hour several times this week. If you ain't inside that cathedral door when the clock strikes 11, you ain't getting in. Clear?
Yes, sir.
And if you don't like it, find another church and go to hell. Because you don't choose your church. God's already placed you. This is where you've been fed. This is where the lights get turned on. How many of you learned something Sunday morning? Yet you've been going to church for years. I'm tired of broken commitments. And I want to repair the breaches. And you get yourself straightened out. And you start understanding that I intend to enforce the standards that God sent me here to elevate. I'm not going to be dragged down to your level to get any kind of job done. I never have. Don't intend to start by my 70th birthday. You rise to the standard. If you want to be a bunch of spiritual stars, end up like the Lakers in the toilet. All the Lakers needs a coach to cut Shaq down to size and slap that little snotty Kobe into some humility and tell all of them that there's a bench that probably is hard enough to make their butt sore or they do what I tell them to do. Now, the best thing can happen to this church, if you don't intend to get in line, is for all of you to get out. Don't need your money. Don't need anything you got to offer if your attitude is wrong. With God, the way you do something is more important than what you do. And I've had a bunch of compromising sub-staff members that are going to start enforcing my way of doing things or they're getting out. I've carried a burden. God has forgiven me for so much, I have to give them another chance when they say, sorry, sir. But not when I begin to detect that they have an agenda and a way of doing things that they think is better than my way. Well, they can go start a church. Because this church, as long as I breathe, is going to go my way because I'm committed to doing it God's way, and God's ways are not man's ways. Now, go find yourself a pastor that doesn't care whether your soul's saved or not. All he wants is that you love him. Well, I'm going to get you to heaven as long as you stay here. And if you don't want to go to heaven, I'm kicking you out. Now, you better decide now, one way or the other, and get on the phone and start talking to me.